Welcome to The Drama Dialogues, Life and Relationships Unraveled. I'm Jenny and I'm here to empower you on an exhilarating journey. Together we'll navigate the twists and turns of everyday dramas with practical tips and engaging stories so you can have a powerful day every day. Get ready to embrace healthier relationships, effective communication and personal growth. Join me as we unravel the mysteries of life's dramas and share a few laughs along the way. Get ready to ditch the chaos and embrace the magic. This is The Drama Dialogues. Hello, Kirsten. I am so happy to have you on The Drama Dialogues today. And I know everybody else, when they hear what you're going to talk about, is going to be really excited. I've got lots of regular listeners who message me and email me and say, oh, I love that. And I know this is going to be one of those episodes that people are going to be coming back to me. So I'm going to get you to say mostly about yourself, but I got an email. I get lots of emails from people saying, can I come on your podcast? And not everybody gets a reply. Well, they'll get a response, but not everybody gets in the door. And I saw yours and I thought, yes, you are exactly where I need to talk to somebody in my life right now. So it was just perfect timing for, selfishly, for me as well. So I think the listeners will get a lot out of it. But welcome to the Drama Dialogues podcast, Kirsten.
Well, thank you for having me, Jenny. I am really happy to be here, even on the Easter Sunday.
Yes. So we're recording this on Easter Sunday. It is 5 p.m. my time. What time is it in LA?
It is 9 a.m. here.
So you're at completely the other end of the day. You still got all your nice, I don't know, do you do Easter?
I do. Actually, my daughter loves to go to church on Easter. And so we always go. And then, I mean, as a kid, I used to love Easter egg hunting and the whole nine yards. But yeah, I do like Easter.
I rang the church bells this morning for service. And my teenager is less excited these days, but she really liked her little, I got her a Spider-Man thing instead of, Easter eggs aren't so much exciting for her, but anything Spider-Man and she's in. So
okay,
we've had a Spider-Man Easter today. So the Drama Dialogues, we talk about life dramas and how we overcome them. So all the things that we can do to help people overcome the dramas. And I think there's a lot of people out there that sit at home thinking, oh, my life's just a big drama all the time, not realizing that pretty much everyone's life is a big drama. There's always stuff kicking off. And you've had quite a lot of obstacles to overcome in your life. So tell the listeners what they should know about you that might motivate them to realize that they don't have to stay stuck.
Well, I'm a woman of action, and I believe that it's never too late. No matter what age you are, no matter where you are in your life, where you're starting, I think you can reinvent yourself. I've reinvented myself numerous times, and it works. It really, if you can write it down and you can imagine it, you can create it.
Yeah, I agree. What was early life like for you?
Early life for me was pretty rough. I grew up in Berlin, Germany, West Berlin, and my father was not, he had a very bad program given to him, and he didn't know how to fix that program, and it was given us to us, you know, and that's, I think, a lot where it starts for us, is what the programs that are given to us, and then we have to figure out, okay, what do I do with this now? And it was very abusive. And so sports was always my rescue, my escape to get out of the house and to not be around negativity. Because yeah, sports to me was positive. It was reinforcing, you know, you can do this. And as long as you work hard, no matter how good or bad you are, just work hard. And so I always learned early on to just go for it and work hard and then creatively, I started expressing myself through improv in theater. And it was just, I just could be whoever I wanted to be. I could be, you know, it was just such a release. And I got to be in a musical and dance and sing, even though I'm not a great singer at all. It didn't matter about just expressing the words. And started writing my own sketches. And that really built my early memories of sports and fitness and being creative.
And was school quite embracing of that in Germany?
Yes, theater and sports was, especially sports, was very big in Germany. I was at the Junior Olympics in Berlin and was a silver medalist in heptathlon, so high jump, far jump, shot pull, 200, 400, and relay sprints. Yeah, it was very promoted, with back, I mean, we're talking now 30 years ago. Back then, sports was everything, and was a honorable thing as a, to be at the Olympics and or the Junior Olympics and represent your country.
Absolutely. I mean, I know from my school experience, sports was way up there with the things that you should be doing, and I was absolutely useless. Completely useless. For me, that whole mentality was so hard because I was like, I really can't catch that ball. But I do think there's a lot of mindset in sport as well, and I think, there is a lot of you can or you can't. And now I'm
Absolutely.
an adult, and I don't really believe in those cans and can'ts, but back then that was a real thing.
And yeah, it's either you make that time or you don't. Either you train for it or you don't, and if you're not good at it, if you really want it, you have to train yourself to get good at it.
And I'm doing a little bit of that now. I want to talk about it a bit more later and dig into, like, because I know one of your passions at the moment, is getting older women, as in post 40, into weight training and lifting and being in shape and strong. And that's a journey I'm going through myself that started in January. So I really want to pick your brains on some of those things. But you have reinvented yourself quite a lot over the years. So tell us about that kind of way you started that path.
Hey, yeah, it's been a journey. I started off wanting to be an actor. My mother always told me that is not a real job and you need to have a real job, which was then I went, okay, what is a real job in Germany? So I got a business degree and worked in the corporate world for 10 years. And I was, when I left the corporate world, I was assistant marketing director for AOL. And again, I was around events. Was in PR. I was always about the creative part. It always stuck with me. But really, the 8 to 5 job, or well, CompuServe and AOL were really a young company. It was fun, and as long as you did your job, they gave you a pretty bit good leeway of how you used your hours. And so that was my business start, and I found bodybuilding really because I had an injury in my left knee from all the different high performance sports, which cause you to use one side more than the other. And so I did an internship with a physical therapist because I wanted to become a physical therapist until I saw what is required and how long I would have to go without getting paid. I was like, I can't do that. And but when
Realities of
I
life, eh?
Of course, yeah. Can you really afford going to school for 5, 6 years and not getting paid? So that was hard for me. But I loved everything about the body. And so this physical therapist taught me, why don't you do bodybuilding and build the quad muscles? And you would think with being an athlete, you built all that already. But what bodybuilding did, it really fine-tuned and gave me the balance between both sides, and helped the not favorable side to be stronger as well. So I didn't have the imbalance. And I never had to have surgery. And I thought, wow, what a powerful tool to not only be able to vainly change your body of the way you look, but really to feel stronger and have more mobility. And I thought it was a tool to really, I later on learned was such a big tool for me to have more longevity.
What age were you when you started that?
18.
18. So relatively young for female bodybuilding, I would imagine. I don't know whether
Oh,
that's.
there were no bodybuilders, female bodybuilders in the gym. It was all, everybody was in aerobics. The girls had to do aerobics and the guys were in bodybuilding. And I remember being one of the first girls And I had a good friend who was a bodybuilder, and he taught me a lot about what it meant to be disciplined, what it meant. And during that time, I also was bulimic. So I had an eating disorder because I was naturally very athletically built, but everybody wanted to be this thin and skinny girl. So I was in conflict with eating and what was healthy, what was not healthy, and sought out a doctor, and the doctor didn't know much about it and said, well, as long as you can control it, you'll be fine. But I learned later on that with eating healthy and bodybuilding, it actually gave me a structure of knowing what is healthy and what helps my body to be at its best without having to listen to the social norms.
Yeah. So being in a very male-dominated space at 18, how was that for you?
Well, I was a tomboy, so I kind of felt comfortable in it because I never was really a girly girl because of my upbringing at home. I think being a girly girl meant you are weak. And so I had to be really tough and strong, and meaning I had to take on some male tendencies and be really tough, which I had to unlearn to be a woman later on. But in that time, it really helped me in my 20s because you're so lost and trying to figure out what do you want to be, who you are, what you're not, what program works for you. And I was very accepted in the bodybuilding world, and it felt very comforting and good.
I spent my well, when I was 18, I joined a ship management company, very male-dominated space. So I was working with people on ships. I wasn't on the ships myself, but I was communicating with every day. The office was surrounded by men. It was a very male-dominated space. I feel really comfortable in those spaces. I feel less comfortable in the female-dominated spaces. And as you say, as you get older, you've got to then learn how to be more in your feminine side than maybe in your masculine side, because that's the things that we've learned.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah, because we don't want to be stamped as the bitch or the, you're not nurturing enough, or, I actually still go through to this day. I go through things like that as far as that I have a lot of strong, intense energy.
Yeah, well, I do too. I mean, I think we're in different ends of the spectrum, but I remember on our first few dates, my partner Matt used to get so upset because I always went and opened the gate first. And he's like, we were because it was between in COVID, we were doing socially distanced walking, and I would always go and open the gate first. And he's like, I can't even open the gate for you.
And you're thinking, I've been doing this all along by myself.
Woman, I can open a gate. It didn't even occur to me to
Yeah.
wait and wait for somebody to do that for me.
Yeah, I read a really good book, and it said in the book, because men are from Mars and women are from Venus, that even though you know how to do it, don't always do it. Don't give up all your special powers right away. So if you know you how to fix a car, you don't have to tell him you know how to fix a car. Let him do it. If you know how to change a light bulb, let him do it. If that's what makes them feel special, then let him do it.
Yeah, and that really falls into Mel Robbins' let them theory.
Exactly.
Have you
Been
heard,
around for
have
a
you read
long
that?
time.
Yeah. Just let them. It'll be fine. You've done a lot of, you've done quite a bit of work in the acting world alongside your bodybuilding. So where did the, I know you did acting in school and things, but where did that come in this bodybuilding sports path?
Well, unless you are born into the industry and you have some doors that open for you magically because of your father or your mother, and somebody gives you a chance just because of that, you have to lead with what was given to you. And a lot of times for actors, it's not our acting chops. It is usually our physicality. So my physicality of being 6 feet tall and in shape and knowing how to maneuver, move my body helped me to get into commercials, because commercials is all about, it's like a wider shot usually. It's more the physicality is more comedic, in that sense. So Bobby Ball in LA, was my first agency. It was a sports agency that saw me and gave me a chance to be represented, and that's how I actually got my SAG card. It was a lot through commercials. I did, American Horror Stories and Flake and all that, but leading really the beginning for me was commercials, and then in the commercials I got to have a little line here or a little line there, and then I got to build, and people said, oh, she can actually act too, and she doesn't just have a bodybuilder body, because it is a good balance to have both. But it was my way of opening the door. It says you can get a job, and now people get to see you on screen, and now other casting directors will give you a chance to do something else too.
What was your favorite acting role?
The Killer Clown. I love the Killer Clown. I loved how I made her. They gave me free range, really, because when I auditioned for that role, it was actually, I wasn't meant for that. I didn't audition for that role. I actually went in and auditioned for a much smaller role. And I remember just saying, fuck it, I'm just going to, excuse my French,
No, it's okay.
I'm going to
It's a
just.
very scary podcast.
Okay, good, great. We can be honest here. I just spit on the floor. I kissed my muscle. I just did all kinds of stuff in that audition. And the casting and the director saw my tape and he loved it so much. And he said, I have a different role for you. We're going to rewrite this man's role for you. And that's how Hightower came around. And then they loved what I did with her because it was a lot of improv. You have two cameras on you for 4 hours straight, no break. And we're just moving through the scenes. And then I got to create her. They did a mockumentary on her, and they said, "Okay, well, who is she?" And so I said, "What makes killer clowns be killer clowns? What's the psychology behind it?" So I made her sensitive, because at the end of the day, we all have the same mission. We want to be loved and accepted, right? That is everybody. I don't care who you are. We all want the same thing. And what happened to her in her life? So that was my favorite because I really got to dive into her. Her soul, and then the Righteous Gemstones has been my you'll see because it's still playing on HBO right now, and not all episodes have been released. What we have seen so far is that I'm playing opposite of Walton Goggins, Baby Billy, and Valen Hall, who's playing his wife, Tiffany, and I'm their kung fu nanny that is very centered, very put together, and has to deal with this. The biggest baby of the family, not the children, but Baby Billy himself. And I got to fight and protect the family. I got to help them with their children. And there's so much more nuances that will come out in the show, which I really loved to create and give her all these colors. So it's been one of my favorite roles, besides
When,
working with all these A-list stars.
well, yeah. When I looked at your show reel and I saw the killer clowns, it just made me laugh my head off because my daughter's absolutely terrified of clowns. And it just really made me laugh because I don't know why people get so scared of clowns,
And
but
the funny story is, after, because we would, it was night shoots, and I was done at 6 o'clock in the morning filming the clown. So I said, you know what? I'm going to keep this on. They had, prosthetic on my forehead, and they had to hold the hair and everything. I mean, literally, it looked terrifying. And I said, I'm going to keep that on and wake up my daughter in the morning and then drive her to school. And because I had carpool, so I had to drive all the other kids to school as well. I said, you know what? I'm just going to live as the killer clown for a day and see what that feels like. Oh boy. She wasn't the happiest. She thought I was out of my mind. And, I drove them to school. The boys loved it. I literally went to the grocery store in it. I went to get a car. My car was in the shop to get fixed for something or oil change or something like that. And so all day I was rocking around as the killer clown. And some people were terrified, and some people just thought it was the most amazing thing ever. So it was quite an experience how people responded to me.
well, I was laughing, stifling my laughing. I was laughing so hard, but I wanted to hear what you were saying. Yeah, my daughter would not be happy with that at all. And you have done quite a lot of comedy roles. Would you consider yourself quite a comedian? You must be to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love when people are laughing. I don't mind when people are laughing at me. It's fine with me. I just there's something about hearing people laugh that is just soothing to my soul. And I do love comedy. I love comedy and drama and action. Those are my favorite genres. If I ever have a bad day, I will watch a comedy. Nothing like laughing.
Going back to what you just said about doing night shoots, like that literally sounds like my worst nightmare because I'm an early to bed kind of girl. So you need to build a lot of stamina to do those sorts of long shoots. And I know acting is not easy, but people earn their money when they act. So
Oh yeah.
what is it like when you're in those studios or wherever you are filming for that type of shoot?
So I love it. You have to love the craft because it's the long hours. People always think, oh, it's just a glamorous thing and you're just in your trailer and you get carted around. And yes, you do get that. I do get my trailer, I get my first class, I get carted around. But there's also my sister came to see me on set and she had no idea what that would be like. And what the first day it was 8 hours, and the second day it was 17 hours. And she's like, oh my God, I had no idea how many retakes there are for this scene. Especially one day she was there, the entire cast was there. So everybody had to have their shot, their close up, their wide shot. So there's a lot of that goes into acting, and there's a lot of downtime. So you're sitting around a lot. And then when they say, okay, now you got to go on set, you have to be in character, you have to be ready. And when you have a 17-hour day, staying in character for 17 hours and not get tired or not ready, that is part of your job. And that's what we get paid for, not only to be ready, but to deliver it authentically, right? And those, we have a lot, it's a lot of hours. When I did the Kill Clown, I was in the skimpiest clothes. It was at the old Paramount Ranch. It was 40 degree outside. I was freezing. My body was shaking. I was going through hypothermia when there were scenes where I had to lay around for half an hour on the floor with no covers. And it's brutal. It's not glamorous as people always think it is. It is fun and I love it and I will do it for the rest of my life. But it is, you gotta grow patience. We always say in acting is that hurry up and wait. So they hurry you to set. You're probably there way too early, but just in case you have to be there. There were the days that we had to wait around, and because of weather conditions or because we don't know if we have an outside shoot and all of a sudden it starts raining, we can't shoot. So things can get postponed. Sometimes I've been on set where I didn't get to do my scene at all, and then you have to come back the next day. So there's a lot of that going on too.
So when we step back to you were doing your bodybuilding in Berlin, at what point did you decide to move to LA and what kind of instigated all of that?
So the instigation was my son and I. Well, I was married, and my son's father took him to United States. He was stationed in the military in Germany. We were going through the separation, and he took him with him, and he decided not to bring him back. And I was 29 at the time, and I needed to get my son. So really, the forcing factor was my son's well-being and me going after him and getting him. And then I was in the States and I was like, okay, should I go back? I mean, so many changes to not have to leave my job, to go after my son, to then be in the States, not knowing when I'm going to get him back, to then I had to make a decision. Do I want to stay or do I want to leave? And I decided to stay and see what happens. And that's really how I came to LA.
When did you realize that your son wasn't going to be brought back?
After a month to 6 weeks, because he was supposed to take him only for 2 weeks, because he was getting restationed somewhere else in Texas, and he was supposed to take him for his vacation that he was on for 4 weeks. And after 2 weeks and then 4 weeks and then 6 weeks, I was like, okay, something is going on here. And it was a way of his father trying to be with me, I guess, to have a carrot that I would come after. And it worked because I did. And But that didn't last long, so I went and took my son and went on my ways.
That, I mean, that it really is a mother's worst nightmare, I think, just that realization of, and it was good that you were able to get out there and follow him.
Yeah, and I gave up everything. You know, I gave up my job in Germany. I gave up everything, my home, everything, just to go after him and then make a play. Make had to restart everything. Talking about reinventing yourself, I restarted. This was in Texas. I went to Texas, got him there, and then figured out, okay, I'm going to go to California. And then in California, I had my truck, $3,200 in my pocket, and said, okay, I'm going to have to restart.
And what was your first step to restarting?
Finding a place to live, and then figuring out how can I make money with what I know. So I dabbled in working in networking companies, which I realized I don't like calling people cold calls. Back then they used to do cold calls. I thought it was the rudest thing ever to call people, and especially when people get called after 5 o'clock. They had a long day and my compassionate side came out and I was like, I can't do this. This doesn't feel good to my soul. And that's when during that time I was also competing and getting on stage for fitness, and because I wanted to be in the fitness magazines. And then once I was in the fitness magazines, I know it sounds really quick, but it actually happened really quick because I won my shows. And then I decided to make it a business to help people to transform their bodies. And it was really people starting to ask me constantly for advice. And so kind of fitness found me, helping people found me, because and I had a way of understanding when somebody told me, okay, I have this issue and this is my goal. What do I need to do? And I always, maybe it's the empathist in me, empathic person in me, that I'm taking your body and you, who you are, by asking, okay. And I think the acting helped with that, because when you create a character, you want to have you be empathic about and have empathy about the person and what they are going through, not judging them, but really saying, okay, what is your day-to-day life? What is your body's challenges? And how would I do it if I had that same position, that same body? And it helped me to help other people immensely by saying, okay, well, if I had this and this and this, this is what I would do. And it worked. And my success rate was very, really high. And that's really how I started fitness. I rented a space from a gym. Then I became one of the biggest trainers. At some point, I think I had like 23 people in one day. It was a lot. And sometimes I grouped them together. And then the gym asked me to become their director of exercise and help other trainers to be better as well. So I got to do both ends, the business side, and but also teaching others how to listen.
Yeah. So it sounds to me like you've always lent into your strengths. So when the shit has hit the fan, you've kind of gone, right, okay, what have I got? What can I work with? And you've lent into that. And you've quite intuitively gone, nope, that's not for me. Cold calling is not for me. So I need to go and find something else that is more for me. What would you say to the people sat at home listening who are going, well, I don't have any strengths. I'm not that sporty person. I don't have that thing. What would you say to them?
Oh, everybody has a strength. I mean, for me, believe it or not, I had a speech problem when I grew up, and I used to lisp. And it was one of the hardest things for me is to actually speak, because I always thought people were judging me. So I think we all have a uniqueness about ourselves, and if it's not perfect yet, because nobody wants perfect anyway, is just figure out What is, are you a good writer? Are you a great creator? Are you a great dancer? Are you great with children? Are you all everything? Everybody has a talent. Are you great working on your own? Are you great at coding? Are you great at creating music? I don't know anything. We all have specialties, and I think lead with your talent, and then the rest will come.
I completely love that. And also, I would say that sometimes you just have to try things. You had to try being a calling person to realize you didn't like it. Whereas my 18-year-old just started a job and she went, "Oh, mum, today was dead easy because I had just had to call about 100 people today." I was like, "That's not easy. That's a skill. That is
That is a
tough."
skill.
Lots of people do not like that. So the fact that you can do it is completely amazing. And she had no idea that that was a skill or something to be recognized because she just thought everybody could do that. I was like, that would have been the worst day in the world for me.
Same here. Yeah, I mean, heads down to her because that is a pure talent and keeping people on the phone wanting to talk to you.
Yeah, I mean, it was for their best interest, but a lot of them, they weren't English speaking necessarily. So she had to navigate language barriers and all sorts of things. All of those communication skills are so important. And at 18, yes, maybe she doesn't want to do that in 10 years, but she knows she's got something. Before that, she didn't know she had anything. So sometimes you just got to go and try stuff
I
instead of
agree.
saying, "Oh, I'm not creative." I mean, how many times have I heard that as a coach? "Oh, it's so boring. I'm not creative." Well, maybe you're not artistic in that you can't paint a picture, but maybe you can do something else that is completely creative that's not painting a picture. Or, there's lots of ways of being creative without it being artistic.
Yes, I agree. And I think we have to be really careful about when we say, I'm not good at this. Because we are pre-program our brain, and I'm the biggest example of it. I always said I'm not good at remembering names. But really, I have been telling myself this. So I'm in class with the groundlings right now, because we all need still training. And the first exercise we had to do is remember people's names. And I was like freaking out in my brain. I was like, oh, I cannot do it. And I was like, stop it. You cannot say I can't. You have to try. And if you try, you will get better at anything, right? As long as you become a pro at anything after 5 years, you do it over and over again, you become a pro at it. Now, how good at it you are, it's all about how much you enjoy it. But I had to really stop myself and say, I can't is such a negative word. And it puts us immediately in a box and puts up these walls where, like you said, just try. And I would say even to my children, try it all. Try it out. See how it feels. And if you don't like it, great. But at least you knew you tried it.
I'm a bit with you. I find it really hard to remember names. And I've realized that if I can see it written down and hear it and say it, then it kind of all clicks together. So I just acknowledge that, okay, to learn somebody's name, I have to see it, say it, and hear it. And then it's generally fine.
Create a story around the name. That's how we remember it. Yeah.
We have a guy that we know who's a brilliant networker. He's amazing. He's also done a podcast episode about how to make calls without making yourself feel sick because he loves making calls and he remembers everybody's name and he has that storytelling thing. I'm like, what was the story again? My perimenopausal brain kind of goes, what was that story? I can't remember which one that was.
Oh, yeah, the premenopausal brain. Oh, my God. Mine was really apparent when I was traveling in Europe just a couple of months ago now. No, not a month ago, last month. Got off a train way too early, and I'm like, what the heck am I doing here? And my brain just like, woof.
It's tough. Although I keep saying I'm really looking forward to menopause. It's all going to be great and I'm not going to have any problems. And everybody around me keeps going, "Jenny, seriously." I'm like, no, it's going to be great.
You're talking yourself into positivity. I think that's a great way to do it. Yes.
At what point has it always been the way? But at what point did you go, right, I'm going to focus on, well, is this what you're focusing on? Women or men over a certain age, 40, I think it says 40 to 75, building muscle. So where did that come from?
I looked at what my clientele was, to be honest. It's very simple. I mean, I've trained teenagers, I've gotten people ready for competitions and all kinds of things. But I looked at who am I training? What seeks me out? And what seeks me out is usually, anywhere probably the late 30s, but usually around 40s, all the way up to my oldest gentleman is 95, and I just have a niche for people that have a mature body and have had injuries, have tried everything and nothing worked, and I can help them guide them through small changes on how to make big results.
Oh, and is building muscle the important thing? What
Oh,
does it do?
absolutely. So why it is so important to build muscle is because muscle atrophy happens to us all. We cannot stop it, but we can slow it down by having more muscle. And muscle atrophy means that the body starts eating its own muscle, right? And especially if we don't have enough body fat. But also when menopause happens, progesterone and testosterone change, we need to build muscle. When you lift weights, you're actually recreating an autophy, I can't say that word. I can't say the word. I can't. Autophagy. I think that's what it's called, in the right way. What means basically is that it's a cell renewal, right? The body creates new cells and gets rid of the old ones and raises the HGH levels. And that's what happens when we're lifting weights. When you lift weights, your bone density gets thicker, you're building muscle, you're raising your HGH level. So it changes our mood, it changes, it raises our testosterone levels. So working out and eating healthy is super important to build, but also to get through menopause.
Yeah, so I started my journey in January. I had been to the gym for about a year before that. In fact, we joined the January before, and I would say we'd been flaffling around a little bit. You know, we'd been lifting a few things and doing a little bit of lat pull downs and not really focused, just kind of messing around in the gym. And I used to look over at the free weight section and think, I am never going over there. That's terrifying because on the free weights, you've got to be in control of stuff. Whereas in a machine, it goes where the machine goes and you're fairly okay that it's going to be fine. So I speak to quite a lot of older women, I would say of my age, in the gym or in the swimming pool or in various places. And they say, oh God, no, it's terrifying up there. I would never go to that bit. And do you find that a lot that people get terrified of those, that free weight section or just the weights in general?
Because it's such a male dominant place, right? There's a lot of testosterone running around there. Guys huffing and puffing and slamming the weights. And it can be very intimidating because it's so male driven. And really, all there, men are way more insecure than women, believe it or not. That's why they need to make all this noise, where women just go somewhere else. And
I
I
find
feel
that really
like.
funny, actually, because I do look at them making all this noise. And I think to myself, you're going to kill yourself doing that. You really look like you're going to do an injury. I spent 4 years doing Pilates, which I think was really helpful for knowing where my body should be and where the strength, where you need to have strength if you're doing certain things. And I look at these men and they're like bending their backs and they're doing all this stuff and they're. I'm going, oh my God, you're gonna like, we're gonna have to call an ambulance soon. But I don't know whether that's true or not.
Well, there are guys that know what they're doing, and there's guys that don't know what they're doing. And believe it or not, when I go into that room and I see them, I question, should I say something to them or not? Not only am I a woman wanting to tell them how to lift weights, and usually I'm much stronger than most of the men that are lifting weights. How would that person feel? Because men are already so insecure. So I always tend to rather give advice to a woman than a man because men don't like to be given advice, especially in a male dominant place like the free weights room, right? But I always say to women, don't be scared of it. They would love for you to come over there so they can show off how great of a pecs they have or whatever. It just feeds their ego if you're just walking over there, especially if you're a single woman. But no, and that's all jokes aside. I really think that don't be scared of it. It is And but start with machines first. I always say start with machines first. I think it's a safer way to understand, like you did with Pilates, is to understand what muscle groups are you using and what's the goal. You know, understanding, because machines explain to you what muscle group you're doing and then how you should move in a safe way. Because once you go to free weights, you don't have the machine guiding you anymore and you can get injured. So I always say start with the machines first and then go to free weights. Now, free weights are much better for the negatives and the joint balance, right? Because when you're in a machine, you're guided, so your joint is really stable. Well, when you do free weights, you really have to stable yourself a lot more, and your core is a lot more engaged. So,
There's a big difference. I embraced the free weights since January. When an ex-Marine took me in hand and said, "Right, you're going to be doing this," and I've also embraced the being told what exercises to do. That's great. I've got an app that says, "Do this many reps at this weight." So I've really embraced it, and I really love it. Like I have gone from no exercise, pretty much, maybe the odd walk, casual walk, some Pilates, to being in the gym 4 to 5 times a week. And I really miss it if I don't go. We get there about 6:15 in the morning and we do mainly the free weights or whatever the app tells us. So I'm up to 10 kilograms each arm for the dumbbell thing.
Great. Shoulder press, yeah.
And I did a dumbbell row thing at 17.5 kilos the other day. So
Awesome.
getting up there, but
Yes.
the thing is, I've been in calorie deficit and weight training for since January, so that's about 3 4 months. I'm like, why is this body not looking any different? Now it does. I do this, I can feel something. Finally, there's something in my arm that's quite hard. But I think a lot of women also, we expect things to happen really fast. And it's like, oh, I've lost 6 pounds in the last 14 weeks. That's a bit rubbish. What would
So I
you
think
advise?
the misconception that I think we have in our when we started with lifting weights is that the weight scale needs to move faster. And I always tell when people come to me is that let's get away from weighing yourself on the scale. Let's check your. I always take measurements on the waist, the arms, all the areas we want to shrink. Because when you put 5 pounds of fat and 5 pounds of muscle on a scale, they both weigh the same. You're not going to see the difference. But man, is the size difference. The size of 5 pounds of fat and 5 pounds of muscle is drastic. So what the scale might not move, but the change in your body is happening. So you repositioning, reproportion your weight distribution in your body by lifting weights. And that's where the magic happens. And that takes time. And for 10 pounds of lean muscle to be converted from fat into muscle, it takes a year. So I always tell people, how fast do you need to be there? And what commitment do you have? Can you get there faster? You can, but most people can't commit to faster. Most people can commit to maybe 30 minutes, 45 minutes a day to their workouts. If they have an hour 15, that's a luxury nowadays. So to really get there the fastest way, you would have to work out twice a day and you'll get there within 6 months. But most people cannot make that commitment. So when I get train when I train actors who have to get ready for a role, their time crunch is much better because their job is to get in shape for this role. So they can spend 3 hours and now given and half an hour to an hour in the morning, half an hour to night. It's all geared towards their body changes. They have no other life forces happening to it. And if they do, they usually I mean, this is their job, and that's what they're going to get paid for. So when you get paid to go into the gym, if you would get paid to go to the gym, and let's say somebody pays you, I don't know, $50,000 to just to go to the gym and to transform your body in 6 months, I bet you would take a different commitment to it than you would right now.
Oh, I'd be looking awesome in about 3 weeks. I love your point there, though. And I've decided, I said yesterday to Matt, I really needed to draw some Sharpie lines around the area that I measure. Because if you literally use it like half a centimeter lower than you did before, all the measurements are completely all over the place. So I think
Yeah.
what I really want the listeners to know is that if you're tr really training and really in calorie deficit and really trying and you're not seeing things change, it cannot not be working. It's impossible, other than if you're just ge if you're lying to yourself. So if you're genuinely tracking, you're genuinely training, you're genuinely walking, you're genuinely doing some things, it cannot not be working. You just have to give it time, and people are so impatient.
I agree. I think that if you have the blueprint, like for instance, my programs, I give the blueprint. I tell you exactly what to train, what day, what machine. I have a video of it, how the machine works if you want to go to the gym, a full nutrition program, and a BMR calculator so you understand how many calories does your body need just by sitting. By you and I are sitting here and talking. Our body uses a certain energy, calorie burn to do all these things, to talk, to move my hands, to whatever it is. So knowing how much that is, so for me it's about 1800 calories to 2500 calories for me just to sit here. And the more muscle we have, the more calories your body needs actually to just sit, because it has to engage all these muscles. So when you exercise, you usually have an extra 500, 600 calories. Are you working out or are you not working out? How often do you work out? So by that, you have to calculate your BMR. Once you know your BMR, your body resting rate, then you can add or take away your calories. So we should always, because it takes about 3,500 calories a week to burn one fat body, 1 pound of fat. 3,500 calories, that means 500 extra calories a day need to be taken away from what your body needs to stay the way it is right now. So if you want 2 pounds, that's 7,000 calories. A lot of times people come to me, I want to lose 2 pounds a week, or I want to lose 5 pounds a week, blah, blah, blah. Well, there are certain tricks that I have that are you can find in my Fitness for the Busy Lifestyle for people that are having to go to events, and how to drop 5 to 7 pounds in 1 week, and it in a healthy way. There's a very magical way of doing that. But you need to have guidance. You need to understand what it is, what your body is doing, what it needs right now as far as caloric intake, how much your commitment you are willing to give, and then you can have a realistic plan of what timeline of when you will achieve it. And most people's timeline is 6 months to a year. You cannot kid yourself. Yes, I get ready, people ready within 3 months, sometimes 6 weeks, but the commitment is brutal.
Is there anybody, do you have a favorite actor, actress that you have worked with in those realms? And what is it that you liked about them? You can name them or not. I don't know whether you can.
Yeah, I can name them. I mean, there's numerous people that I've trained that I found fun. Nicole Ari Park is one of my favorites. She's a dear friend of mine. I got her ready for Cleopatra on Broadway, and she is fun. She gets bored like me really easy, so we had to constantly switch it up the workouts for her. And there were days when she didn't want to do it. And I said, well, bet the girl that wants your role wants, she's working out right now. And so it put things in more in perspective, what's behind it, right? I got Robert Patrick Jr. ready for Gangster Squad, but I did more his nutrition part, as far as, because I had to get him really leaned out and rugged, and he had quite a bit of weight that he needed to lose. So I put him on a rotation diet, and which is just rotating. They call it carb confusion diet, they call it keto diet. You know, there's a magic to there's a way of rotating your body's carbs, so it tricks the body to release more and never store body fat. I explained that as well on my programs. And Just seeing my clients on TV and then see the results that they've gotten is pretty amazing. Not gonna lie. I said, oh, I was helped there. Like when Chris Hemsworth first got his role at Thor, he came to my house and he was asking for nutritional vitamin supplements. So we helped him with his whole nutrition and he did the training on his own, but we had to get him a plan of action and provide him with all the things that he needed so he can be ready for his role.
We will talk about your plans in a second, and I'll put any plans that you've got in the show notes so people can access things that you have available. But what would your kind of advice be to start with when it comes to dieting in inverted commas? Would it be calorie deficit? Because that's the big thing that everybody's talking about now. I mean, it makes logical sense to me. Or would it be something else like keto?
The first thing I always say is the most important is stop eating after 5 or 6 o'clock at night. I think a lot of our fat gain happens at night. Yeah, because we're snacking in front of the TV, we're having a glass of wine or what it is, So the body's digestion is busy at night. So the first thing I always say, show me what you're eating for dinner. Change it. I always say you can get away with anything for breakfast and lunch, but dinners are unforgiven. That's when we are gaining our weight. So I always say start with simple changes. Look at your food and see when do you eat the most sugar. So I'm not a complete believer in keto diets. I am a believer in balance. So our brain needs sugars. Our muscles need sugars. They are filled with glycogen, so we have energy, so we can lift the weights. So when you are eating carbs for breakfast, or lunch, better say. So let's say you wake up and you want to start the day off right. And you'll get to work out first thing in the morning on an empty stomach. Then you can have your carbs right after. But if you are not working out right away, I would wait until noon to eat your first carbs because sugars are for energy. And if you're not using it, you're not driving your car anywhere and just parking it in your car driveway, you're not going anywhere, why do you need to put gas in the tank? So the body is the same way. The body needs sugars to have gas in it so it can go somewhere. So it has energy, right? We get energy from carbs and from fat. Monounsaturated fat like fish, avocado, nuts, and so on, olive oil. And when we are not driving anywhere, we're not expending in much energy, we have to slow down with the gas in the tank. And if we go doing it again, then we go up. So, keto diet or low carb is fantastic if you're not exercising that day or if you are trying to trick the body into releasing more. So let's say I want to lose 5 pounds real quick by Saturday. I highly recommend to go low carb diet for 3 days. You do a carb day Monday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, you go like super low, like completely cut them out, right? And then on a Friday, you can have some carbs because now your body jump starts again and you will lose weight faster. Because your body adapts every fourth day as far as storage. So it gives it, your body works in exchange. You give it carbs, it releases carbs. You give it fat, it releases fat, right? But it does it slower. So you can get away with doing it for 2, 3 days and go really low carb. What happens is when you do it too long, your metabolism starts slowing down. The body adapts to what you're doing. So that's why a rotation diet is much better for the body. And that's why I agree with some of the coaches that are saying you shouldn't just do keto diet.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such a confusing industry. I'm just going to call it an industry, but it's so confusing for the normal people out there because they hear so many, this person says this and this person says that. And I think it really is confusing. And so many people say to me, oh, why are you calorie counting? That's like, it's so hard and it's so terrible. I'm like, well, I've got an app. It's actually really easy. I quite like it. It's fine. And then they go, oh, well, I've been fasting, intermittent fasting. It's worked really well for me. But if I intermittent fast, I feel hellish. Like I feel really terrible. So, like you said, I tend not to eat after 6 o'clock at night. That's fine. But the whole thought of not, like, I've got a friend that doesn't eat for 3 days. To me, I know there's certain schools of thoughts, but I think you have to do what works for you.
Well, of course, any calorie deficiency, you can drink all day long, and the calories in the drinking is less than what your calorie intake is to keep maintain the body, and you will lose weight, right? So alcoholics get skinny too. It's all about calorie deficiency, but a calorie is not a calorie. So I believe that what's this ultimate goal? Do you just want to be skinny, or do you want to have shape? If you just want to be skinny and you want to starve yourself, you can do that. It works. Absolutely works. I'm not saying it doesn't work, but you're going to lose muscle with that. You're going to slow down your metabolism, and you're going to be a yo-yo. A lot of times people become yo-yo dieters. So when your body loses a lot of weight, and then you're going to gain weight back because for whatever reason you can't contain, you can't sustain that starvation, and then you eat again, your body will hold on to it more. So yo-yo diet is actually very bad for the metabolism because we're messing with it. When you eat regularly every 3 hours and your insulin levels stay consistent the same, and you stick into proteins and high fats and carbs every now and then, the body finds much more balance in it and is happy there, and it doesn't stress because we have to deal with cortisol levels too. So when the body goes to stress modes, which can happen through starvation, because the body doesn't know what you're doing, it just knows, wait, there's danger of dying and I need to survive. So it will do whatever it needs to survive. So find what makes the body the happiest. For some people, it is to intermittent and start eating at 11 and then stop at 8 o'clock because it works with their time schedule. Maybe they start their day later than we do. Maybe they don't get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Maybe, and that works for them. For me, I've tried intermittent and I've realized I have to have breakfast to feel the tightness in my skin, to feel the energy that I have. I rather stop eating earlier because I just feel great. In that sense. But I also have learned that if I eat carbs, like when I film, I don't eat carbs because the carbs take so much for my body to digest that it drains my brain energy. And I need to be completely sharp and focused of when I have a task at hand. So I try to stay away from too heavy foods, which is pasta, rice, potatoes. These are really hard for my body to digest. It takes longer and more energy. So I stick to simple sugars like grapefruit or berries or a banana, which help my body to have a quick burst of energy, but not make me where I want to take a nap, because that's what carbs do, unless we go work out and, but I usually do my carbs right after my workouts just so I can feed my muscles and they look nice and round in shape. So again, what's the goal here? Is your goal to be have an hourglass shape, or is the goal you want to just be a stick?
My goal was definitely, and I know I'm going on the right route for it, is just to be stronger. Like just to get into past 40s. I'm well past 40s now, and feel just stronger in myself. Like you can walk up the stairs without having to stop halfway. And I want to be in my 70s and tying up my own shoelaces and all of those things. And I think that people look too much at the aesthetic. Yes, I would look like to be slightly smaller than I am, but actually that's irrelevant if you're not strong. And I know that even though I'm one of my heavier sizes, I am stronger than I've ever been at all, bar none in my life, because I'm just doing, my mindset's different. That was a question I had actually. Is the weight training largely to do with more to do with mindset than physicality, would you say?
Oh, great question. First of all, I agree with you on feeling stronger is much more important and way healthier way of looking at life than the social norms that are put on us. It is definitely a mindset to show up every day, but it is a physicality as far as lifting weights. So one exercise works for me that might not work for you. And it's just the way your body is built and moves, right? It's from DNA, from generations on, given to us is this is what I got, and this is how my body wants to move. These are some people have severe as tight Achilles, right, or hamstrings, and I cannot change that. So I cannot do certain exercises with them that would harm them instead of help them. And so the mobility of your body and in your genetics have, play a role in what you can do and what you can't. But that doesn't mean there's so many exercises that you can do that I might not do, but they're good for you. And so I definitely think that the first part is a mindset of stepping to the weights and saying, I'm going to figure this out and I'm going to make my body stronger. And then it's a physicality thing of what works for you or not. And you have to try it. And that's why I always say, start with the first set really light, just to see how the body moves with it. And be honest with yourself, if it doesn't feel good, don't do it. If you cannot feel the b muscle that you're trying to accomplish to fire up, then that exercise is not for you.
That's interesting. I also think I've learned in the last few weeks that if the app puts the weight up to something that I go, that's just my form is going to be terrible, I'll just drop the weight and do more. And I think people just go, oh, I can't lift that, so I'm not going to do any of it.
So, rule of thumb, and I think you're very smart to listen to your body. I always say, listen to your body first. Don't listen to your ego. When you train with ego, you're edging out. You're gonna get injured. And I always say, if you can do 5 reps, it's your weight. If you can't, you need to drop the weight.
Yeah. One thing that I have never been able to do, I'm going to go down, to, I'm not going to say I can't do it, but so far it has eluded me, is a press up. My arms go down and then they do not go back up again. Is that just my body going, yeah, that's not for you?
Well, in general, women have a harder time with push-ups as it is, or pressing, because we have t breast tissue. So we don't have a lot of pecs, right? And guys always ask me, how much do you bench press? And I'm like, I don't need to bench press. I don't need to get really big pecs, where men are so, that's all they do is push-ups, push-ups, pressing. Now, women can get really good at that too. Aesthetically, does it look really great to have a very strong male chest? I don't think it's really feminine, but there are women that love to. Now, on the physicality point, it is you can train it, you know. Your tricep actually works on the negatives, and your chest works on the positives. So you have to train both. That's why we train chest and triceps around the same time, because we're using the same muscle group, or the same activation of the motion. But I till this day don't like push-ups.
Well, that's good. I'm going to strike it off my
Like,
to-do list.
it's okay. You don't have to
It's
like
okay. Kirsten said, I don't need to do it. Brilliant.
it. Well, I didn't say don't do it, but I do say for women, bring their arms closer together and don't be shy to be on your knees and do push-ups. It's totally fine. It's the ego in the men that said, oh, you can't do it on your toes.
What I would say to everybody listening, the fact that I am having a reasonably detailed conversation about weightlifting of any description is hilarious. I hadn't stepped
You're
in
very knowledgeable,
foot in
yeah.
a gym before I was about 38. So, there is hope for all of you out there that have never been into a gym because I started weight training in a gym in a very light fashion a year ago. I was 46 when I went first into a weightlifting gym. So everybody listening at home going, oh my God, what is Jenny talking about? I never thought I'd be having this conversation. And I've come a long way in a short space of time, actually, just from the knowledge that I have about it. I never knew that this was a thing. I could never have had this conversation even 6 months ago, probably. So it just goes to show that it's not necessarily happening now for you, but it can happen. And I
Absolutely.
believe Kirsten's got some programs to help with that.
Yes, I
Tell us about
do.
those.
So, well, I always believe it's never too late. Like I said, I have a gentleman that started with 93, and his life is much better because he can, because balance and mobility, especially the older we get, feeling strong is everything. Just forget about the way we look, but just the feeling of being able to not having to hold on when we do a squat or sitting down on the toilet or getting out of a car. Those are just necessary things that we do daily. So I have programs that are geared towards the fitness for the busy lifestyle, meaning people that are at home, they don't want to go to the gym, they're traveling a lot, they're stuck in a hotel, they don't have time, they have children, they have responsibilities. And so I have a whole program for people that want to work out from home, or you can do it at the gym too and take my workouts with you there. And also I show the rotation diet and prolonged fasting and why and how it would work for you. And then I have a track workout that I live by. And I know this sounds scary to most people. What? Running? Jumping? I'm too old for that. I cannot. And it's very important that no matter how old we are, that we are still doing some plyometrics, which is track workouts, right? Either you do a little jog, or you do a little side shuffles. All of these are really important for our balance, and it raises your HGH levels. It makes your joints stronger. It gets into your fat storage faster. I'm actually certified in menopause and in hormonal changes. And one of the first things they always talk about is to do a high intensity for 20 to 30 seconds. Like a jump, like a side shuffle, like a quick jog for 20 to 30 seconds, and then burn it off 2 minutes. So that is available on my site. And then also the gym. It's a healthy habits, I call it, because we all need healthy habits. Even I, every day I need to remind myself. And it's all my gym workouts. It's my blueprint. It's my 16-week program that I do, that I've done myself to get on stage. It helps people that have never gone to the gym to have a detailed information on it, how to use the exercises, why, and how to start a program. And then also for people that I have a program, they've been going to the gym and they're just stuck and they want to change.
The one excuse that people give you for not doing it.
No time. I don't have enough time.
And what do you say to that?
Start with 5 minutes a day. So I always say when people come to me and they say, "Oh, I don't know if I can do this. I don't have time." I said, "Set your alarm for 5 minutes. Get into your living room and do something for 5 minutes and then stop. And do that for 2 weeks. You just created a new habit and new time in your schedule. If we want it, we're going to do it. And then move to 10 minutes. And next thing you know, you're doing 30 minutes." I always say if you're in the gym or if working out more than an hour a day, either you are really cheating on your diet. So take a look at your nutrition. Or it's just your stress relief, you know? Rather come back. I always say after an hour, you need to feed your body, you need to nourish your body. So, but 10 minutes, I have 10-minute workouts on my side as well. You can do 10 minutes. 10 minutes a day is 70 minutes a week. That's a lot.
Yeah, you just got to get started.
That's it.
I think
Take the
that's just
action.
the hardest thing, isn't it, in the world is to just JFDI.
Just get started
Just
and
fucking do it.
stick to your commitment, because don't wait for motivation. Stick to your commitment of what you said you're going to do.
And I think for me, it's being really focused on why you want it. That's been the thing that's kept me going massively is looking around me and thinking, I don't really want to be like that when I'm older, or I do want to be like that. So it goes two ways. You know, you see the old person shuffling around and think, no. And then you see the older person in the gym that is doing the thing and you think,
Doing
oh,
pull-ups.
exactly. Yes. It's quite an older age group in my gym, actually. The average age, I think, is about 45 in the gym. So, which is, I think, quite unusual. There's not that many younger ones, more younger ones coming in, but I was one of the youngest ones in the area, so it's actually quite nice. But it really inspires me to go, oh well, they're doing it. I can definitely do it. And just look at why do you want to be strong? I want to be strong because I don't want my bones crumbling during menopause. My grandma had osteoporosis and she lost inches in her height because her spine crumbled. I don't want to do that. So let's have stronger bones. Let's build the muscles to keep the bones together. And I think it's really focusing so hard on your why. Why do you want it?
Well said. Well said.
And
Why
it
do
might
you
be for your
want to
next
do it?
acting job.
Pardon that?
It might be for your next acting job.
It might be, yes. I always stay ready. You is what? Preparation and what is that? Opportunity creates success.
What would you have liked me to ask you that I haven't asked?
Oh, you've been really good. I think one of the biggest ones that I thought was what is the misconception a lot of times when we have when we're looking back at our age and where we are now?
Yeah.
And I think we are always mourning what we were instead of embracing what we are and how we are in, I call menopause a second puberty. And I feel like we are just stepping into our greatness at this age, you know, and embrace it and embrace it with love and not the social norm that what they say we should be and what we shouldn't be, you know, but just to embrace who you are and where you are now, because it's so much more fun that way.
Yeah, I feel better than I have ever felt in my life. I hated being 18. I was ill all the time. I was not fit, and I'm as fit as I've ever been. And I think this is a great age. I love turning 40. I mean, it's almost 7 years behind me now. So I'm looking forward to the next zero. I love decade turning. I find decade turning is a great moment. I know you can live start something new every year. But I think it's a great moment to go, right, what has the last 10 years taught me? What has happened in the last 10 years? And I'm 3 years now off my next zero. So you just got to embrace it and have fun. And if you don't, you sit at home wishing that you're doing what everyone else is doing.
I agree. I celebrate my birthday every year with a photo shoot, and I created myself. And I'm like, and this older lady told me once, she said, take as many pictures as you can because you'll never be that age again. And I did, you know, starting from the year of 40, I did it every year and I love it. I love my 40s. I love my 50s. I'm 51 now. I'm going to be 52 this year. And I enjoy it. I love being me and seeing what my body is going to do and how we can dance through this life together.
I know a lot of women in their 50s listen to this podcast, and I know that they're going to be emailing me as soon as they listen to it. I know they will because they always do. They're a great audience, and they always say, "Oh, I learned so much," and I know they're going to have learned a lot from this. I have a final question. I hope you brushed up on it, but if not, it'll be ad hoc. What day in your life would you go back to and relive exactly as it was?
There's two actually days in my life. It's the day where I have met my life partner. I think it was a very magical moment in my
Tell me
life.
about it. I love dating stories.
I made a list 3 months prior of the things that I was looking for and the things that I would red flag for me. And my sister and I sat together, I will never forget the day. And I said, okay, this is what I really, really want. And then I decided, okay, I'm going to put myself on this dating app, even though I was terrified. And 48 hours later, he messaged me and he thought I was AI generated. He didn't think I was real. And I said, let's hop on the phone call. And he's like, what? A phone call? Like a real phone call? We had a conversation. We went on our first date and it was love at first sight. It was exactly what my list was to the T. I know this sounds mind blown. I actually sent him the list later on, and it's been incredible. You know, no relationships is perfect, but he is perfect. And the second one was when I got the call for this for the role on the Righteous Gemstone. It was, you know, when you're 10 years in and you reinvented yourself and you are working in the darkness, basically, with nobody there to support your vision, even though you have people supporting you, but really it's a one woman show. And then to get that call was a I did it. I made that happen. And that feeling is what I hold on to for new stuff.
Amazing. And My listeners will know my story where I did exactly the same thing with Matt. I wrote my list. It even said had to like theatre. And he worked in the theatre at that point as a lighting designer. And
Wow.
we met online. It took us 4 weeks from when I joined to meeting him because I expanded my area slightly. And yeah, that was it. And I like so many people think that I'm talking nonsense when I say, be so clear on what you want, because I think there's a lot of toxicity about the list. I think we see in a lot of rom-coms, we see in a lot of like reality shows where people have these long lists and there's a lot of negativity about that. But it depends what's on what the key bit of the list is. If you're wanting specifics in visuals and exact jobs and all of those kind of things, then maybe it's too specific. But if it's about values and about who they are as a person, what was on your list?
The things that I ask for are the things that I am myself, and I already accomplished myself. So I think we cannot ask for something that we cannot deliver ourselves. And I think a lot of times these lists don't work if you are asking for something that you can't deliver yourself. And what was on my list really important was that he had a passport, that he n loved traveling, that his children are already teenagers and older, but I wanted somebody with children, that he is creative, but he's not in front of the camera. So he's a film director and producer, so he's behind the camera, so the balance works really well for us. That he was a very compassionate and kind person, great communicator. And what else was on my list? That he is not a fanatic when it comes to working out, but in the healthy aspect of it. So that he does go to the gym 3 times a day, 3 times a week. I did write down how many days a week he needed to go. And yeah, that I mean, there was,
That's
you know.
exactly the sort of thing I'm talking about, listeners. It's not about whether they're specifically 6'3" and 3/4" and their eyes are blue and they've got amazing eyelashes and their own teeth. Yes, okay, those things might be important, but it's much more important to know if you want them to travel or if what age you want their children to be. I had exactly the same thing. I wanted teenagers, not younger kids, because I didn't want to be going backwards with my child rearing. I didn't want to have more children. You know, those are the important things, not the aesthetics. And yes, going to the gym 3 times is important to you because it's part of your lifestyle. So it would be silly to find somebody who didn't do that because then it wouldn't be in alignment. So I just want everybody to listen to this amazing nugget of information. You can write lists, they've just got to be sensible. And when I
Absolutely.
say sensible, I don't mean realistic necessarily. I had somebody I worked with who said, "Oh, my friends just say my list is unrealistic." We got on a call, we went through the list. I was like, "There's nothing unrealistic about that list. It's a great list." Within 2 weeks, she'd found her person.
There you go. Yeah. People, I mean, I had a man tell me, it was a client's husband, that my social media is too intimidating. And that I need to downscale myself to find the right person. Now, my guy is not even on social media and he can care less. And he found me no matter what. So don't change who you are. Be authentically who you are, and that person will find you.
And that question is always too intimidating for who?
Exactly. If
Not
that's
for the
intimidating
right
for
guy.
the
Never for the right guy, because if it was,
right
it wouldn't work. Like 6 months down the
Exactly.
line, it would all go wrong and you go, what happened there? Because you'd hid some stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my soapbox. Thank you
Oh,
so much for taking the time to come on today, Kirsten. I am so appreciative of your time. And it's been such a brilliant chat. And I know loads of people are going to get a lot out of it. I will put all the stuff in the show notes, links, and whatever you want me to put in there will be in the show notes. So go and do that. Have you got any plans for the rest of the day? You going to the gym?
we're going to the church right now. And then later on, I'm going to work out. Yeah.
Well, happy Easter. It'll be a slightly late Easter for everyone else. I'm hoping for this to go out on Wednesday. So happy Easter to everyone. And as I always say, listeners, have a powerful day, whatever having a powerful day means to you. And if that means going and looking at Kirsten's websites where you can find out some mini workouts, or whether you go and step foot in the gym for the first time, go and do that.
All right. Thank you, Jenny. Was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. This podcast is intended for entertainment and information purposes. I hope you get a lot out of the podcast and from listening to it, but please do not use it as a replacement for a professional psychotherapist or GP. If you need some professional help, please go and seek that. Do not use this podcast as an alternative to that. If you need a coach, you know where I am. If you need a coach in a different area of your life that I don't support, then please go and find them. There are many great coaches out there. Make sure that they are accredited coaches with proper training.